What can be done to make the streets of Jacksonville safer for pedestrians, cyclists, and motorists? A look at that just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes and through our app as well. Just ahead, it's the upcoming Safer Streets Summit by the North Florida Transportation Planning Organization. Do you think the streets are safe? Do you think they're unsafe? Share your stories with us, especially if you're a cyclist. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's Movable Feast on the show today as we take some delicious samples of Smokin' D's Barbecue in St. Augustine, plus small business coach Jen DeVore Richter, all of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, studies have shown that Jacksonville can be a very dangerous place for pedestrians and bicyclists. A report out in January by the National Complete Streets Coalition ranked the Jacksonville metropolitan area the fourth most dangerous place in the nation for pedestrians. Next week, the North Florida TPO will be hosting its first ever Safer Streets Summit to take a look at that issue. So here's the obvious question: what can be done to make the city's streets safer? CEO Jeff Sheffield from TPO thinks about that a lot. And he's here in studio to share insights and take your calls. Jeff, good to see you. Good morning. Full disclosure, North Florida TPO is an underwriter for this program. And the number to join us, do you think this area's streets are unsafe? What are your experiences with that? Share your stories and questions right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jacks. And you can weigh in on Facebook as well. This is coming up next week, the Safer Streets Summit, a Safe Streets Summit, I should say. This is going to be bringing together some interesting experts in the field, looking at what other cities have done, right, Jeff, to tackle this issue.
It is. And I want to make sure, too, we acknowledge the complexity of the sponsorships, because we actually have both public and private participation in this with the City of Jacksonville, the Florida Department of Transportation, the First Coast Chapter of the American Planning Association, the Health Planning Council, JTA, and the Chamber are all involved in this. Because of the complexity of the issue, it's not just, frankly, about bicycle and pedestrians. There's a lot of vehicular traffic issues and just challenges in safety overall for the network. So the goal here, particularly for this first round, we do anticipate this to be an annual summit starting this year. Mm-hmm. This year is building champions. So what we're trying to do is engage both public and private sector leadership and start to develop that broader conversation about how we move our community forward with regards to safety.
You want to improve roadway safety and accessibility for everyone, whether you're driving, riding transit, biking, or walking. Everybody.
Correct.
With the idea of complete streets. Mm-hmm. Everybody that participates in our streets.
It is. I mean, obviously, the bicycle and pedestrian issue is the one that draws the most attention, and it needs to be the primary focus at the moment as we try to deal with it. But in the end, as we're designing the streets better for all modes, then you all see benefits from it.
Okay, so let's talk about the challenges in Jacksonville. We are one of the least friendly places in the country for pedestrians and cyclists. In fact, we're ranked the fourth most dangerous place in America. You take your life in your hands if you get out and walk. In some places.
I think, again, you know, the complexity of that issue is trying to understand how, you know, it's a challenge. Statistically, we do rank very, very high in that category. But the challenge, again, is it's not a overall issue within the community. There are certain areas that have a larger issue, obviously our higher density areas, our activity centers. And so it becomes a combination of both infrastructure investments to education and behavioral changes within the community. You know, there's not any single solution to address the issue.
What are some solutions Jacksonville could look at, Jeff, that other cities have maybe adopted?
Yeah, we're very pleased for the event, actually, to have Gabe Kaplan. He used to be the commissioner in Chicago and D.C. as their Department of Transportation director, and he's now started up his own company called CityFi, and it's really looking at everything. It's putting people first as he's designing these new roadways, and it's looking at technology and other advancements. So I think for us, you know, it's the basics first, and always making sure that as we're putting in these roadways and redesigning these roadways, that we're accounting for all modes. So we're being very sensitive to sidewalks and bike lanes and bus bays and those sorts of things. But I think going forward, to really affect also those statistics, it's behavioral changes, it's educational changes, and then the advancement in technology. The technology that really on the vehicular side is already making things significantly safer for us. We have some opportunities for some pilot projects that are going to be used at signals for crossings that will sense pedestrians entering the intersection and make both the vehicle and the pedestrian aware of a potential conflict that might happen. Mm-hmm. I think technology opportunities will really give us a chance to move forward too.
That's exciting. Yeah. What are some examples of behavioral changes, awareness,
well,
that
you know, it
you
comes,
would like to see?
To me, it comes on both sides. And so, you know, you have, and again, a lot of this becomes anecdotal as you listen to bicyclists and pedestrians who are out there, and then you see sort of behaviors of the incidents. You have drivers in some cases that maybe see them more as a burden within the roadway than a participant within the roadway. So they don't pay as much attention to them, or frankly, desire that they be there. On the reverse side, you have cyclists and pedestrians who are not necessarily following the laws the way they should, riding in the wrong direction, crossing where they shouldn't. And so I think it's important that we not single out any one user as being the single problem. And that's the point of this event. It is a combination of all that are causing these statistics to be so high.
And this event, by the way, is coming up next Wednesday, October 25th at the DoubleTree by Hilton at 1201 River Place Boulevard. That's on the South Bank. You can register just by going to Eventbrite and searching North Florida Safe Streets Summit. Let's go to your calls right now. What do you think about Jacksonville streets? How could they be safer? 549-2937. John in Fernandina Beach. Hey, John, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a suggestion. I have been crossing with the light, and I've had people making like lefts and rights and almost run me over, and then they are angry with me when I'm crossing with the light. And I think if they had signage that says turning cars must yield to pedestrians, and then also as far as the educational part, on the exams, it should be, two, three questions about pedestrians that, you know, what must a vehicle do when cars are turning? Because Jacksonville isn't the only most dangerous city. I think three of them are all in Florida, so it's educational.
Yes. Thanks, John. He's right. The most dangerous cities are all Florida cities.
Yeah, warm weather. A lot more months to walk, elderly combinations of retirees and those sorts of things. I mean, we can identify so many different issues that maybe address that. And it again goes back to the comment, there isn't one issue. It is complex. And to your point, you're correct. That is a specific situation that occurs at an intersection, and we can look to solutions to help solve that. And that's one of many to look at overall. I can tell you, as I mentioned the technology before, the sort of incident that you just spoke of at the intersections, the type of technology that's going into vehicles now, the advancements that we're able to put in some of these pedestrian signals at the intersections are also going to contribute to that. So rather than even a physical sign that expects a driver to look at it, now their vehicle will alarm them of the pedestrian.
Megan in Orange Park. Hello, Megan. You know,
Hi.
I was on, hey, Megan, I was on Blanding Boulevard yesterday. Not necessarily the safest street.
That's actually what I want to talk about.
Oh, okay, so, Chief.
I'm in the military and I work at the Naval Hospital, and so I've biked for commuting, you know, in a bunch of different places. And so recently I lost my car in the shop. It had to be in the shop for about a month. And so I was having to commute to work on my bike. And there's really no way, there's no really good way to get from Orange Park to the Naval Hospital, except on Blanding, and there's no bike lane there, so I was having to ride in the shoulder. And, you know, during some of the ride on Blanding, there's not even a shoulder to ride on. Mm-hmm. And I feel like one of the big issues with cars that I see personally is that they don't really, I mean, I understand they have somewhere to go and they're focused on what they're focused on, but they're not thinking about why these people are bicycling or walking or whatever the case is. I've seen other people walking along Blanding as well. It's like, I don't know, I guess they think I'm trying to inconvenience them, but it's like, if I was to take the bus, I can't even take the bus to work. To take the bus from Orange Park to work, it takes like 2 hours for what is a 15-minute car ride, and it's not available at the hour I would need it in order to get to work on time. Right. So I think that there's just like a big issue with infrastructure in general in Jacksonville, because it is really spread out. It's kind of hard to tackle.
It really is. Yeah, thanks for that, Megan.
I think even in her comments, she mentioned multiple scenarios of situations. And it, again, back to that original message, it isn't going to be just a bike lane. It's going to need to be changes in behaviors of drivers and how they perceive them, theoretic, more efficient transit service, all of those things she mentioned. There's two or three issues that are in need of addressing.
But, you know, here's one follow-up I have for you, Jeff. All these things need to be addressed, but how do we overcome the hurdle of our built environment? As she pointed out, we are this incredibly sprawled out place. We're the biggest city in the country in terms of overall land mass, or we maybe the second biggest now. And this city was just laid out in such a way that they didn't take into account the fact that the sprawl in the long run is not good. It's not a good thing. We're too spread out. If you don't have a car, you're out of luck. Public transit is not adequate. If you're trying to get around on a bicycle or on a sidewalk, you are not safe. The built environment is hostile toward the building the kind of culture that we want and when it comes to this.
It's very difficult, and it is that chicken and egg conversation as we look at how developments are going in, where they're going in, activity centers being built throughout the community, and the challenges of the desire of residents within our community wanting to be all over our community. So it is very difficult to address. Our particular coverage area is 2,600 square miles from the TPO boundary. You can't possibly address every single mile of that 2,600. And so you have to figure out solutions at every level, whether it is bikes on buses, whether it is even Uber and other types of environments that allow some flexibility. You know, the phrase now really is about true mobility and how you do it. And in some cases, there are going to be so many challenges that exist that, to your point, it is built and therefore an alternative solution will have to be done.
Like a workaround.
Somehow. And in some cases, I mean, you hate to say it, but in some cases, you can't fix everything. That's the reality of it. But you know, it starts with a conversation like this. It starts with the event where, again, we're not naive to think this is a session that we fix everything. And that's why it is to build champions, because we're going to need this to be a long-term goal.
Lots of calls about next week's Safe Streets Summit. Richard in St. Augustine. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Melissa. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks.
I have a couple comments and then one question. In regards to incorporating everything and having solutions, there's a summit that's going to happen in Southern California in November that's going to talk about urban planning, autonomous vehicles, et cetera, and that's LA Commotion, and there's a website, lacommotion.com. That might be a good place for the leaders to go, the local leaders, just to tap into, to get some ideas of how this is progressing internationally.
Yeah, we actually, to be honest, the state of Florida as it relates in the entire country, is probably the one, the most aggressive state in terms of the movement of autonomous vehicles. We're one of only four that even allows testing to occur. So I would suggest to you that we have hosted events within this state that are as aggressive as the event you're speaking of in California. We had one here in town, in fact, just 3 years ago, that had about 500 people from around the world come in to speak of autonomous vehicles and technology advancements and that sort of stuff. We certainly always want to look out to our partners in other states and so forth, and appreciate your comments. But I can tell you we're very, very active here in the state of Florida with that.
And I was just throwing that out.
Sure, I understand.
For additional information.
Definitely.
And the other comment I had is that what's coming with the new vehicles as far as safety devices and automatic braking and things like that, that's wonderful. The only downside to that is none of that technology is going to be retrofitted. You can't put that on a 2011 Chevy, for example. So the time period where we're going to have all these cars that will have that is going to be a bit longer than what we hope. And so we need to find a solution between now and then to make people more aware. And so this gets to my question, and that is, it seems that the laws, at least in the state of Florida and other states, if you are in a car and you hit somebody on a bicycle and you cause them harm or cause them death, those laws are not as strong as perhaps they should be if you hit somebody else in a car. So my question is, what can we do at the state level, law-wise, that makes a car to bicycle accident more punitive, more to give people more incentive. So if they hit somebody and kill them, that it's not a misdemeanor, that it's actually a felony.
Mm. Thanks, Richard.
Well, you know, that I hear you. I think those are issues that need to come up in conversation and to decide whether or not the laws in place are stringent enough to address it. You know, I would prefer to work on educating drivers on how to not ever be in that situation to begin with. But I hear you. Also, to your technology and the time that it would take, you are correct, which is why we can't go away from worrying about still trying to put in more infrastructure and bike lanes and sidewalks, because the technology won't come as fast as we mention it. But it is, however, part of the long-term thinking as we move forward.
Mark on the West Side. Hey, Mark, thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, as bad as this problem is, thank God we have the Skyway Express. How much worse would it have been, huh?
But that's a joke, right?
That's heavy with sarcasm.
Okay.
My two points are, you know, I don't know if this would contribute to safety, but something that just drives me crazy driving the streets of Jacksonville is we seem to have traffic lights right out of Sheriff Andy Taylor and Mayberry RFD. They seem to be set on, you know, just certain, you know, this one goes green for 2 minutes, and then this one goes green, and then that one. And you're at a big intersection, like trying to get on the Buckman Bridge, say, and you've got all these, you know, lanes and on-ramps and off-ramps, and half the time there won't be any cars over there, but the light is still green, allowing these invisible ghost cars to merge onto Roosevelt Boulevard. And it's that way throughout the city. I'm sure some smart guy has come up with a traffic light that will, you know, shoot the laser or senses the presence of cars or the absence of cars and reacts accordingly, because we don't seem to have them in Jacksonville. Another quick thing is, and I believe they have this in California in some places, after midnight, when you're the only guy on the road, it is just insane to make you wait for six different traffic lights to go through their cycle. It would seem like a great idea with a few traffic cars on the roads at midnight to make every light a yellow light. You know, you come up or a flashing red light. You know, you come up to the intersection, you look around, there's no cars, you can go. Yeah, I've stood there for 5 minutes waiting for these lights to cycle through, and I'm the only one at the intersection, and it just drives me crazy.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Adaptive signal controls. Those are what those are called, and yes, they are out in places being tested, and in fact, we will be testing one here in the city of Jacksonville on Hexer Drive,
really?
Actually. So it is the premise of what you're speaking of, that it would sense all four directions and look at queuing of vehicles and allow the intersection to work on its own to best move that traffic. Again, not here yet, but everything is evolving in the direction that you just mentioned.
Chuck at the Beaches. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, guys. I've got a couple points I'll hit on pretty quick here. I ride my bike 7 miles to work both ways down a major highway at the beach headed towards St. Augustine. The traffic was running about 60 miles an hour. 30 feet to the right is a sidewalk. It goes all the way. It's against the law to ride on the sidewalk on your bicycle, if I understand correctly. However, I am not riding my bicycle 5 feet from people going 60 miles an hour, so I ride on the sidewalk. And there's kids on the sidewalk, et cetera. You don't want your kids riding in the street. The other thing is we need to make it against the law to touch your phone when you're driving your car. I think that's the law in California. When I approach a light or a stop sign, I have a saying. It is heads to the left, heads to the right. That means I'm looking at the sidewalk for pedestrians to the left, pedestrians to the right. I'll watch the light. I think what we need is an education process that teaches people how to approach a stop sign and how to approach a stoplight and how to look on the sidewalk for pedestrians. And last, I think we need to enforce laws where people do not make proper stops. They turn right on red lights without stopping. They turn right on stop signs. They do not come to complete stops. And we used to have an educational process. If you remember back in the 60s where we would teach people about litter, we could do this on the television and teach people about pedestrians and how to be safe.
Thanks for that. We're getting emails about that too. Here's one. We need to increase the difficulty and cost in getting a driver's license, make the interval to relicense shorter and more rigorous, help educate people. And here's another email. Most drivers don't even know the rules of the road, that bicycles can actually go on the open road. Maybe a driver's license recertification exam is a possible solution. Some tweets from Rob. We need better mass transit, more sidewalks, narrow traffic lanes, and add more bike lanes. One more tweet. Eliminate ambiguous signage. Extend the Doctor's Lake Trail from Orange Park to NAS Jacks. We need education. Okay. Bill in Arlington. Hi, Bill. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Many of your previous callers, the one that wants to take it from a misdemeanor to a felony, that's opening up a Pandora's box of converting some simple acts that are accidents into criminal prosecution, and that goes across the board. But everything that you talked on this morning revolves back to personal responsibility. You know, we have bicyclists on the road, we have pedestrians on the road, and in many cases, I know a lot of these things where bicyclists are involved in accidents are a case where that bicyclist himself could have taken some personal responsibility and his safety would have been increased fold. And as you have a right, does not subrogate your responsibility to look out for yourself. And I believe it. You know, more people should ride bikes. More people should exercise. There's an obesity epidemic in this country. But we need to take some more actions that require personal responsibility. And the last comment is, we've spent $47 million on big TVs. We've spent $90 million on interior practice fields. All of that could have been spent towards sidewalks to improve the tourist experience using the bed tax. We would have never had to raise taxes. So there are other ways to spend bed tax monies that would help the bicyclists and the pedestrians that do not include the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right, Bill. Thank you.
Bill, I'm with you on the personal responsibility. I think we can only go so far, whether it's the DOT or the city of Jacksonville or anybody, building better and more complete streets, which is our goal going forward and the part of this summit conversation. Even then, there will still be accidents. There will still be issues. And so there is a level eventually of personal responsibility that comes in those situations as well. But it doesn't discount the problems we have right now. We do have infrastructure shortages. We don't have every road is not built to accommodate everybody.
Yeah, I mean, accidents go down when streets are built in a smarter way.
That is
correct.
To
accommodate everybody.
They
will. Accidents decline.
It will absolutely decline. It will not eliminate. It will decline. And then if you're going to that goal of eliminate, it then adds in each individual accounting for themselves as well. Whether you're a vehicle driver too, I mean, everybody moves around on these roads with levels of entitlement. I mean, we believe that everything is aligns there and that's it.
I'm the king of the road.
And it's across the board with every user. And I think, to me, the important thing is not to single out a single user as the problem. It's every user and some level are responsible for what happens within the roadway.
With all of that said, and by the way, the folks still waiting on hold to talk, sorry we can't get to every single call. Register now on Eventbrite for next Wednesday's Safe Streets Summit at the DoubleTree by Hilton on Jacksonville's South Bank. It's next Wednesday, the 25th. Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of the North Florida TPO. They are the transportation planning organization for this entire region. It's a very big region. They do amazing stuff. They are one of the sponsors of this program, full disclosure. And Jeff, always great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Mistakes you need to avoid if you plan on going into business for yourself. Coach Jen DeVore Richter has that. But up next, Movable Feast drops in on Smoke and D's Barbecue. Back in a moment.
Why doesn't education use innovation to grow like a successful business? Join WJCT for a screening and discussion about this question and others. Raised in School Inc., a personal journey with Andrew Coulson. This event will be held on Thursday, October 19th at WJCT Studios, beginning with an opening reception at 5:30 p.m. The event is free, but RSVPs are requested and can be made at wjct.org/events. WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. Well, they're getting rave reviews and lines out the door for their authentic fresh smoked barbecue. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and hospitality trends across the First Coast, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Cameron Parrott of Smoke and D's BBQ in St. Augustine.
Banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
I want to go back into your childhood, which is not very far back, growing up in St. Augustine and working with your dad. How many years ago was it when he opened the first Smoke and D's?
It was, I think we're coming into our 10th year in October. It'll be 10 years. And when we started it, you know, it was, everybody thought he was crazy, and I can't say that he's not somewhat, but he bought this little tiny piece of land right in front of a gas station on 206 and US 1, Pink Pig out front now if anybody's looking for it. And it just, at first, you know, he didn't really have the money to build the building after he bought the property. So his bright idea was stick me on the corner making boiled peanuts and selling watermelon and tomatoes, and it worked. It's a beautiful thing.
And also that smell of smoking ribs and chicken.
It's primal. I mean, meat over wood, put it in the air with smoke, and it makes a reaction in the brain that is from thousands of years ago.
Well, that was the first location when I Found Smoke and Ease.
Yes.
And lucky me, you have just opened another location.
Yes.
Downtown St. Augustine on US 1. Tell us about that cute little new woody building.
Well, it's a beautiful little thing that basically fell in our laps. The visitor center came to us and they were like, you know, let's get more people in this area. What would work here? And you know, the more we looked at the little piece of property, it's at the brand new visitor center on US 1 North. It's got the new wooden water wheel. We're at the north end of that lot. But when you walk in there, you hear the good blues music, you smell that good food, and you know what I mean? It brings you to an atmosphere, to a place you are ready to eat. And sometimes when you want barbecue, nothing else will do. So
it is very alluring.
Thank you.
Because when I came in the other day and I met you, we started talking about the ribs because I wanted to buy just a rack of ribs to take back and maybe a whole chicken, and I couldn't resist finding out everything else that was on the menu because you didn't just let me look at the menu. You told me what was happening in the smoker.
Well, I think that it's a big part of it, especially in this town and in this area. People around here know good food. They know good barbecue, and they can taste the difference. If you show them, like, the fact that I'm actually doing it fresh every day. One of my dad's favorite mottos is, we need to make at least one person angry every day. I'd rather give you, rather make you mad because I ran out of the barbecue you want, as opposed to giving you barbecue that's not done right. Our motto is, we start fresh every day and we go until it's gone. We don't really have a closing time. So that's a big part of it, is letting people see it's fresh and letting them experience it. Experiencing barbecue, it's an experience. It's not just a food. It's an experience.
Somehow I wish we could share the aroma this morning.
One day I'll figure out how to bottle it.
I'm thinking about it. Okay, some of your sauces.
Yes.
You have a very unique sauce that was white.
The Alabama white, yes.
What is that Alabama white sauce?
Okay, well, it originated in Alabama in 1963 by a man named Bob Gibson. He has a whole chain of restaurants up there. His Alabama sauce is more of a marinade. It's black pepper, mayo, and vinegar. That's it. You cook the chicken in it, and it's very good. We kind of took that concept, saw what he was doing, and ran with it. And after about 2 years of tinkering, adding horseradish and all kinds of other spices, with some of which I cannot share, but once we found the ratio, the clouds opened up and it was like Narnia. We discovered an amazing dipping sauce called Alabama White. We do our version of it. We do an Alabama chicken where we smother a half chicken in it. It's amazing on turkey, really on anything. I love it. Yes. And a key about sauce that I want, one thing I would like people to know about barbecue, sauce is an accessory, not a necessity. Barbecue should be good enough on its own. The meat should be good enough by itself. Sauce should be good, but if you're putting the sauce on the meat already, you're hiding bad meat usually.
Well, we talked the other day about the difference between meat falling off the bone and not falling off the bone. Now,
yes.
I do not like my ribs where it falls off the bone.
It's because you have taste for good barbecue. Ribs that are falling off the bone literally have either been boiled in a crock pot or just overcooked in sauce or something. The key to good barbecue is to keeping the meat very tender, mouthfeel, but you want to bite in and there should be juice squirting everywhere. I mean, it should be a very juicy meat, and the only way to do that is to keep it fresh and to not overcook it. And ribs that fall off the bone and just completely turn to pulled pork in your hands have, in my opinion, been done the wrong way.
Well, thank you for joining me on Movable Feast today. Thank you to 927 Events, our sponsor. And I'm just going to see the pit bull someday soon and pick up my ribs and beans and hopefully meet some friends at Smoke and D's in St. Augustine.
You already got some friends at Smoke and D's in St. Augustine, and thank you so much for having me. This has been a wonderful day. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cameron.
Thank you.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
And we'll be right back.
Okay. It's easy to listen to WJCT even when you're not near a radio. Just visit WJCTnews.org from your phone or tablet. On our mobile site, you're just one click away from a 24-hour live stream of our programming. And you'll also have easy access to all of the top local news stories. Listen live on WJCT's mobile website, WJCTnews.org.
If a hurricane threatens our state,
Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood live in King for a Day, Sunday, November 26th at 2 p.m. in the beautiful Florida Theater. Featuring dance numbers, new songs, surprise guests, and more. Go to WJCT.org/events for more information.
Welcome back. Well, even in our growing economy, 70% of Americans would prefer to be self-employed, and a new home-based business is started every 12 seconds in this country. According to the U.S. Department of Commerce, 99% of all new jobs in America created in the last decade were from self-employed people. And how about this? One-third of everyone in the U.S. is also moonlighting. Now, one person who made the leap to self-employment is Jacksonville's own Jen DeVore Richter. Richter is an author, keynote speaker, and co-founder of Rock My Image. In a life-changing move, she quit her job working for NASA as a marketing executive to pursue the American dream of owning her own business. And now she's on a mission to inspire more people to do the same. But she's got some hard-learned lessons she's learned along the way. Jen DeVore Richter joins us now with her advice on the top three mistakes to avoid if you want to quit your day job. It's a preview of some tips she'll be sharing at an event later this week at the Beaches. Jen DeVore Richter, good to see you.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Happy to be here.
And, you know, people daydream about this, but few really go through with it. It's kind of scary to make the leap. Was it scary for you when you left NASA?
Yes, because I thought that that was my dream job. I was describing my life as good on paper. You know, when you have a job that's, if I can make it here, I can make it anywhere, and you're hanging out with astronauts and seeing space shuttle launches, it feels like a lot to give up. But I always knew that there was something inside of me that was not going to be happy, not going to be fulfilled until I owned my own business. It was just an itch that I had to scratch.
And entrepreneurial people, time and time again, they have that in them. Mm-hmm. They don't feel happy reporting to someone else. They really want to be their own boss, and that was you.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so for people that are like you, you have some advice, which is very good advice. In fact, you have the top three pieces of advice, mm-hmm. the top three mistakes, in fact, mm-hmm. people make when they quit to go out on their own. What are the top three mistakes?
Well, the number one mistake that people make is that they don't set a bold vision and align it with dates. So what is your someday dream? Someday I'm going to own a bakery. Someday I'm going to start a business, right? Well, you actually have to take that someday dream and put dates to it, because a dream without dates is never going to become a goal that you can accomplish. So that's the number one tip. Avoid the mistake of just having someday dreams without setting dates to them.
So when you left NASA, did you set a date for something specific?
Yes, I did, actually. I gave myself a transitionary period of about a year. And I went back to school to learn some new skills that I was going to need to know as an entrepreneur. And I had a plan set for that. And so now I work in quarterly chunks and then in weekly chunks also, just to make sure that I'm accomplishing what I need to accomplish to stay in business.
Okay, so that's tip one.
Right.
What's tip two?
Number two is package what you're good at. So a lot of people just take on the easy money, and that's the mistake that they're making. And they're not packaging their unique gifts and talents in multiple ways. So here's an example. So say you're really good at baking cakes, and people start paying you to bake a cake for their kid's birthday party or for a wedding, something small, you know, that you're starting like that. That's easy money. But you're leaving money on the table by not packaging everything that you know. What if you could sell your recipes online and have passive income while you're building up your business and opening your shop? What if you held cake decorating classes, right, where you could serve 20 or 30 people at one time in an experience versus just getting paid for decorating cakes? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maximize your strengths.
Maximize. And really think about all of the different ways that your passion, the thing that you're really good at, can be packaged into different levels of experience.
You think like a marketer.
Yes.
Okay. And tip number three, I think, is the most important one, which is?
Don't quit your job too soon. Right? So sometimes people just jump straight into a business with the money that's coming in easy. But what happens is 80% of them go out of business in the first 18 months. And I think it's because they didn't have a plan. They just leaped, right? And so you say, forget it. I'm frustrated. I'm done with this job. But you can't go too soon. Give yourself time. Work with a plan.
Okay, and so you wrote a detailed business plan before you left NASA, correct?
Yes, and I had a mentor. And I was involved in the professional association for the career that I wanted to transition into. So I really had a good understanding of the entire industry and success stories and examples of benchmarks that I could follow to make it easier for the transition.
That's important too. Get some mentors and a professional network around you mm-hmm. of other business owners. So this is an example of some tidbits you can glean from Jen's talk. It's coming up Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Lion's Share Cowork Center out at the Beaches. What's going to be happening?
Wow, it's awesome. It's going to be part workshop and part networking. So we really sit and we look at not just the strategy behind small business marketing, but we really look at the tactics that are working now. Not the pie in the sky, you know, theories and things, but really applicable things that you can use.
Okay, this is coming up Thursday night, 6:30. Mm-hmm. Lion's Share Cowork. Register at expertsofinfluence.com. She's Jen DeVore-Richter, author, keynote speaker, and co-founder of Rock My Image. Her book is Amplify Your Business, The Rockstar's Professional Guide to Marketing Success. Good advice.
Thanks, Melissa.
I can tell it's advice that's worked for you.
Yes, for 12 years, going strong. I haven't gone back.
Yeah, and you didn't go out of business in 18 months, like
right.
like 80% of others. So something's working for you.
Something's working.
Okay, again, that's Jen DeVore-Richter. Thursday night at the Lion's Share Cowork out on Beach Boulevard, 6:30 p.m. And in a moment, we'll be back with a look at how seniors are doing in the wake of Hurricane Irma. None of us are doing great, but how about our older friends? That's after this.
On the next Fresh Air, Amy Tan, author of the novels The Joy Luck Club and The Valley of Amazement. She has a new memoir called Where the Past Begins, in which she reflects on growing up. Her parents were immigrants from China. Her mother was guided by beliefs in curses and luck. Her father, a Baptist minister, was guided by Christian faith. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
The Trump administration is ending key payments to insurers under the Affordable Care Act. The president says there is a better way to cover low-income Americans. Not all Republicans agree.
They finally have health insurance, and then the next day they wake up, and now they're not so sure they can afford it or whether they'll be able to have it.
Is the president really trying to sabotage or save health care? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Security at American seaports is tight. That's the good news. I'm Marco Werman from The World. The bad news is that if a bomb were discovered at a seaport, it would cause economic chaos.
Wait, we've got to check all the other boxes so they don't pose a risk. And that process of trying to do that will cause cascading, essentially, backups across the global system.
We check out security at the Port of Boston on The World this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
NFL players are still kneeling during the national anthem. President Trump wants them suspended.
It is very disrespectful to our country when they take a knee during our national anthem.
But not everyone knows that kneeling during the anthem was partly the idea of a former Green Beret. And he has written an open letter to every single American. Nate Boyer this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
So much going on. Welcome back. Finally, this hour, Hurricane Irma was hard on all of us around this area, but it was especially tough on this area's seniors. The local organization Elder Source is working hard to help seniors during and after the storm, and they're continuing to get calls from across the listening areas. People have needs ranging across a variety of areas. Linda Levin is Executive Director of Elder Source. Hey, Linda.
Good morning.
So what are seniors dealing with the most right now?
So they're still dealing with debris removal, fallen trees still in their yard and on their property that need to be removed. Mm-hmm. We're still seeing folks who have had items destroyed that need to be replaced, such as beds, where we're finding seniors are sleeping on floors, and they need that kind of help, food replacement, help with applying for FEMA assistance.
All kinds of things. Mm-hmm. These are issues a lot of residents are dealing with, but for the senior population, what are some special challenges that they face?
Well, some of the challenges that they face is the energy and the wherewithal to stand in a line at a disaster recovery center to see FEMA or doing the online applications, getting to those resources that can help them.
Yeah. And if they have a younger relative, say, to help, it might be easier, but they might not. They might be alone, for example.
Many are alone and many need some additional support, which is where our helpline and our staff have been really terrific.
Okay. So for people that aren't aware, tell us a little bit about Elder Source.
So Elder Source is a nonprofit. We're an area agency on aging designated by the state of Florida, as well as the Aging and Disability Resource Center. We cover 7 counties, all of which were impacted one way or another from Irma. And we help people find resources in the community, connect them with those resources. And most recently, we are fortunate to have been the recipient of funding from the First Coast Relief Fund to specifically help with disaster recovery and relief for seniors.
The First Coast Relief Fund, is that a newly created fund?
They actually started, I believe, after Hurricane Matthew last year.
After Matthew.
And then reconvened now with Irma, which was great because they had that experience and that history and the people already organized. So they were able to pull them together, pull the donors together, and get things started really very quickly in terms of recovery in our community.
And that's great because the senior population in this area, for so many of them, it's the isolation that can be so difficult. If they don't have a strong network of support around them, the isolation, the fear,
isolation
can be really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. The fear, the not knowing where to go, the not knowing who to talk to, not knowing who to trust. There's a lot of people who take advantage of the opportunity after hurricane and take advantage of seniors and try, make promises they can't keep. So there's a low trust if you've been victimized before to know who to call and how to get help.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing a lot of seniors that were flooded out as well? Seniors that are living in areas that were particularly flood prone?
Oh, most definitely. If you look out in Clay County, in the Middleburg area by Black Creek, we had seniors living in housing, senior housing, that had to evacuate and tried to come back. But basically, their place was destroyed, and we had to help them with relocation, and not just there, but in other communities throughout our 7 counties, help people with relocation, finding temporary housing, and helping them cover those expenses that were unplanned for.
And do you do that through the First Coast Relief Fund? How does Elder Source fund these types of assistance projects?
Much of which is supported by the First Coast Relief Fund, and we have, hopefully, we'll be seeing some new funding coming in through the Administration for Community Living and other funders and foundations who are looking to help.
Okay. So with Irma, Elder Source has been even busier than usual, but they're going to have a little fun this weekend. Actually, it's next weekend when they host Grandparents' Day. Grandparents' Day is an actual thing. It's coming up on the calendar.
It is. Actually, Grandparents' Day was in September, the national holiday.
But you postponed it.
We had to cancel it
because of Hurricane Irma.
But grandparents and grandchildren, that relationship between them is so important that we felt that rather than canceling, we would reschedule. It's so worth celebrating. And so that is this coming Sunday. And it is at the St. Andrew's Historic Church on Philip Randolph, and we are really excited.
How did Grandparents' Day get started?
You know, I'd have to go back to the website, but there was a
woman. I'll just go to it right now as you speak. How about that?
There was a woman who started
it. I happen to have this handy-dandy laptop right here.
It's
so
terrific.
As you keep talking, I'll look.
Sure. Well, and it's an opportunity to really recognize that special relationship between grandparents and grandchildren. Grandparents who help in many ways, from babysitting to in many cases, becoming the actual guardian of their grandchildren, having to raise their grandchildren. There are about 8,700 grandparents in our seven counties alone who are raising their grandchildren. So it's a special, mm-hmm. special relationship. There's wisdom that they're able to share with the grandchildren and new skills with the technology that the grandchildren are able to share with the grandparents.
It was September 9th, but not in Jacksonville. It'll be October 22nd.
That's right.
And this is a way to bring the generations together. This is kind of cool as the founders of Grandparents Day are asking older generations to do something grand, as they say, and share your wisdom, perspectives, and key civic values with young people and advocate on their behalf. And they're asking kids and young adults to do something grand and connect and serve with your grandparents and older adults in your community. You know, it's only after my grandparents passed away that I really appreciated them. I hate to say that. I feel really guilty and bad, honestly, saying that. Because I, you know, would go see them all the time, but, you know, it was sort of something my parents kind of made us do. And it wasn't until I got older that I would really kind of sit and talk to them and realize that they had a lot to share. Yeah. And so I kind of challenge, especially younger people listening right now, spend some time with your grandparents, because they're not going to necessarily offer advice and information to you. You kind of have to draw it out of them. So this is an opportunity to do that.
It is. It's an opportunity to do that and to celebrate each other and the relationship. With so much going on in our world, this is a very uplifting, happy time to spend together as family. And it's a free event.
It's free. Grandparents Day, Sunday from noon to 4 in downtown Jacksonville at the Jacksonville Historical Society. That's across from Veterans Arena. Lots of fun. Bring all the generations as Elder Source hosts. And by the way, they're celebrating their 43rd year of service. Linda Levin, who runs Elder Source, she's been pretty busy lately. We all have been after the storm, haven't we? Thanks for coming in, Linda.
Thank you for having us.
All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through our WJCT app and catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8. Next on 1A, with the enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act fast approaching and the president pushing forward with plans to dismantle it, what's at stake for healthcare? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.